Simon McCorkindale was Manimal. He's also in Quatermass 4.
Alf fears the future, much like the theme in Quatermass 4.
Hello. Hello, it's Ralph.
This is Andy, and this is
2.18, what we laughingly refer to as the second series of the Exciting Stardom Podcast, the podcast about the more obscure, or sadly, and overly neglected elements of the pop culture, and hello to Nick Roche.
Yes. So,
we have a very special episode today.
Little Philip Ayers casts a long shadow over the latter episodes of the Stardom Podcast.
It's true. To explain. First, we've got two big features in this exciting episode. It's an episode with a slight difference. Usually we record this all the way through, unbroken for about 45 minutes, but today it'll be in two chunks. In the first chunk, we're going to talk about a piece of programming that we both watched recently, known as Quatermass 4, the most obscure of the Quatermass adventures, which relates to the previous podcast where we discussed the Hammer film version of Quatermass and the Pit,
which was effectively Quatermass 3.
And arguably the most sort of well-known today of the Quatermass
due to the Hammer film, more so than the actual serial itself.
Indeed. And then Little Philip Ayers has sent me a mystery package.
By, unfortunately, due to Ralph's location and the fact that the Royal Mail Postal Service seemed to hate him.
Yes.
Most of Ralph's mail goes through my house.
It's true. I have been in this abode for almost 3 years, and during that time, Royal Mail have managed to lose, quote unquote, a significant amount of packages, or not bother to actually deliver packages. I've caught them at it a few times, but anyway, the main point is that packages for me tend to go to Andy. So Phil, being an evil man,
as he likes to call it, a true friend,
as has been established in recent episodes, found something evil and decided that he would send it to me via Turnbull. So I have it here. It is sort of rattling audio.
It's still sealed.
There you go. Audio. So we'll open it up in about 10 minutes or so. We think it's a DVD of some kind.
Having come from Play.
Having come from Play.com, yeah. So obviously it's something we can watch. So we'll talk about Quatermass, then we'll open up the package, find out what it is, have a slight pause, and then come back to review said item.
If we've been brave enough to review
it. If we've been brave enough.
Having had to watch one of the four Robocop miniseries episodes from around the year 2000 previously, I'm not all that keen on watching anything that sends us.
No, it's probably going to be something quite terrible.
Which leads us nicely into talking about Quatermass 4.
Quatermass 4. So as we said, previously we talked about Quatermass and the Pit, the Hammer version, the third Quatermass serial. Now, to the general public, I don't know if it's still known to the general public, I say Quatermass used to be something that was very mainstream in terms of when the first serials were broadcast on BBC television, they were broadcast live and with a huge event for the viewers of the time. And the Hammer film didn't do too badly when it was released either. But it's probably fair to say that in more recent terms, it's become what we actually do to call a cult.
It's one of these science fiction properties. Well, Nigel Neal, who created and wrote Quatermass, doesn't actually really like science fiction.
No.
And pour scorn upon most of it. Very critical about the likes of Star Trek, Doctor Who, who actually approached him to write for it, I think, on a number of occasions, and he had this time basically turned it down. But he was, despite all that, actually gave some quite chilling insights into what would come, arguably giving us what reality TV would be in the year of the Sex Olympics.
Indeed. So Quatermass 4, which was broadcast as just Quatermass, is also known as the Quatermass Conclusion.
It was, however, as Ralph said, was on BBC for the previous three iterations. Obviously, the big screen adaptations were done through Hammer, ostensibly with Brian Donlevy for the first two, then Andrew Keir for the third one. So Quatermass changed actors, and he also changed TV stations with Quatermass 4.
That's true. Now, for his fifth and final adventure, the Quatermass Memoirs, he did return to BBC Radio in the early to mid 1990s, which is arguably even more obscure than Caterhouse 4, because it wasn't a proper full Caterhouse adventure. It was a sort of half and half making of Caterhouse with reference to cultural events at the time, narrated by Caterhouse himself,
Andrew Keir,
in his last role before he died, in character, telling about his life and things he'd done and various adventures in continuity just before Caterhouse 4. So, 1979, Caterhouse came to ITV.
Yes, because Margaret Thatcher became Prime Minister, it's not the saddest event we have to report about in 1979, but by fuck does it come close.
Indeed it does.
You have, obviously, Caterhouse this time is, obviously, it's set in the future, as it were. Caterhouse is an old man, played by Sir John Mills, who was the Ancient One in the Doctor Strange TV movie.
Perhaps his most famous role.
Choose to believe so. And that's where the first of the problems come in, is the casting of Sir John Mills, who was a very good actor.
Yes.
He's a very poor Quatermass. He doesn't really bring any of the abrasiveness and authority that any of the previous portrayals have. Quatermass was never actually presented as all that likeable a guy in anything he was in. He was smarter than you and he was more right than you.
That was pretty much it. So, in this version of the exciting story, use the exciting quotation marks, it's future times, sort of 10 days from now sort of thing.
Society
has fallen, it's all gone all a bit deranged, there's murder going on in the streets, there's even like murder games that goes on. Society has crumbled, the young folk, which is the main theme of Caterhouse 4.
The young people are evil.
The young folk have basically derelicted their duties. They just want to be like hippies and walk about the fields and
or,
do kind of stuff.
Or street gangs.
Street gangs. Whereas the old folk are generally living under the ground, having formed society and looked after it, and ultimately will be society's saviours because the world is going to end because of young people.
It's true. Fucking young people. Damn you kids and your disco music.
Yes.
So it kicks off with Quatermass being invited onto a TV programme because there's a unique mission between the Americans and Soviets for the space programme, which obviously, as we said, it's in 1979, so it's the Cold War era. So it's at that point you're seeing that. He's asked in ostensibly to pass comment because of Quatermass's origins as part of as head of the British Rocket Group, which sent people into space and who came back with horrible afflictions. So he obviously has some reasonable input. He's there to find his granddaughter who's disappeared, and basically it's probably one of the few moments where John Mills comes close to Quatermass when he has the rant about things. It's in the first episode, it's a bit of a glimpse. It's like, okay, maybe he might be alright. Maybe he's just going to wind up to being Quatermass. He's old and he's kind of out of the loop, so maybe he'll rediscover his form.
No.
Sadly not, that's the most Quatermass he's going to get. However, he's not alone.
No, he's joined by Simon McCorkindale.
And Simon McCorkindale's moustache.
Simon McCorkindale's moustache. Now, Simon McCorkindale is a very capable actor. Sadly, unfortunately, he's best remembered today for an obscure and particularly bad TV show called Manimal.
I will cut you where you sit.
Because
you will just... Now, cease.
Now, Manimal, let's do... No. You're on a right to apply in a session. You're on a right to apply.
It's the right Manimal. To correct you for talking pish.
Manimal was a dreadful TV show which lasted all of 8 episodes, and it's so obscure it has never even been released in video. Where he was a chap, and was he man or was he animal? And he would go, and he would turn into an animal really badly and solve crimes. And it was utterly dreadful. Not very good. It's got one fan.
It has several fans.
It has one fan.
Fuck you.
Like, if you look at all the range of Manimal merchandise, there was the annual.
I own that.
Because I found it for you. And there was the comic.
The comic, well, we talked about this in the previous thing.
Exactly.
The comic isn't Manimal. It was a bad comic that had some Nazis in it that were shit.
Anyway, that's all the Manimal merchandise. But we're getting off the point here. Manimal himself, with a moustache, is in it as a scientist.
I think you'll also find he was in 2 episodes of the Nightman TV series.
As Manimal.
Yes.
Another reason to avoid Nightman. So, So KMS and Manimal find themselves investigating strangeness, which is like an invisible force beam has come to Earth.
It takes away young people, and those that are caught on the fringes of it generally get horrific burns.
Yes.
And eventually die.
Yes.
So it's, as this goes on, there's the, obviously them trying to find a way to stop it and theorising what it is. And it turns out it's an alien that's coming, thing that's coming back to harvest. It's an automated program. There's no green men or anything. This is the signal that they're sending. So ultimately, they kind of, using science,
yeah,
they basically try, make it come back to a site of their location and have a nuke there. So basically, it goes to take it, and it gets obviously bitten.
So yes, because the signal would trigger by the pheromones of young people, yes, in close proximity.
So you kind of have, this goes on, and it's really, really ponderous. It's four episodes and could have been comfortably done in two and been a lot tighter paced, and you probably might actually think a bit more highly of it, but it does drag on.
There was a shorter version produced for a theatrical release, yes, which is where the term the Ketermass conclusion comes from. Where it was designed from the offset to be one of two things, a four-part TV serial and a theatrical film, if I've ever wanted it. So there's a shorter edit available, which I have not seen.
Because we braved.
We braved the TV. Now, it's not commercial. It's not currently commercially available, so hello, YouTube.
Yes, now, you can do it as Ralph did, over a space of, I think, 2 days.
I did over 2 days, yeah.
Or you could do the film Mad Bastard, me, and I did it consecutively.
I recommend it. And the thing is, it's kind of actually kind of eerie to watch, because it basically is, because Nigel Neal was getting on a bit at that point, and it's a thinly veiled diatribe against young people today.
And progress.
Yeah, we're not talking about a subtext here. We're talking about
it is
the actual point of the whole play, which is that young people are useless and feckless. They are not taking any responsibility for themselves. Only the old guard, the old people, can do it, because they're the only people who can save the world. They have created society. And look what happens when you let the old people come out from under the streets to help. They flourish. The world is saved. The young people are put in their place. And we'll have no more of that silly nonsense.
Probably the story drags on. You have McCorkin Dale is a scientist, a chap in his own right. But unfortunately, his wife and kids get taken away by the bees. Now, it's never explicitly said what happens to people that's taken away, but we assume harvested for something, because that's what it was referred to. They're being taken away, so they're either going to be food or maybe furniture for the aliens, I don't know.
Who can say?
But McCorkindale's breakdown is brilliant.
Oh, he was mental.
Because obviously he's lost his wife and his child, so it's understandable. And the moment of pure joy is when some of the young rapscallions try and make him convert, because he's completely lost at this point, so he is kind of a little bit pliable. And they do sort of your typical cult programming and stuff.
Well, their typical cult programming is just to repeat one more and over.
Well, they changed it, because it was just to try and break, to get him to unlearn his science. And it's like he holds up, I think it's a pen.
Yes.
At first he goes, "What is that? La, la, la." And he kind of starts to do it. You can see his mind's kind of going a bit. And I can't remember the next thing he holds up, but he tries to.
It's like a book or something.
Yeah, he goes, "Oh, what's that?" And then there's a big fight.
Yeah. And at no point does he turn into, a cat, like he did in every episode of Manimal.
Panther, I think. And remember, Stan Winston did the designs for the transformation.
I don't care if Stan Winston did the designs for it.
Manimal was great.
It's not.
When was the last time you watched it?
I choose not to.
Exactly. All your bollocks about informed choices.
I wouldn't want to. But the main problem with KMS 4, well, maybe wrap it up a little bit now, is because I wanted to watch it because it was the one KMS thing I'd never come across. And also, even though Nigel Neal was an angry old man from quite a young age, actually, and there are certain subtexts like this, and to be honest, most of his work, which do sometimes make you kind of go, not too sure about that. The stuff he did was usually
interesting,
and usually was what we call entertaining in some aspect. It would still be watchable, and you could, be entertained by it. Probably KMS 4 is that because of the subtext is the supertext, he's forgotten to make it entertaining, so it becomes fairly tedious, and you can understand why there was no interest in doing any more KMS after that, other than the aforementioned KMS memoirs docudrama. done near the end of Mangini's life.
Again, also, it's the obviously Sir John Nell's cast for name recognition, not for suitability to the role.
Yeah,
he was not a good Quatermass.
No, he wasn't.
And so, we don't recommend it at all. But if like us, you have the compulsion to seek out these things and experience them for yourself, either from some form of sadomasochistic standpoint, or merely completeness sake, because you do enjoy British genre science fiction, as well as you cannot get commercially, but if you go to YouTube, it's not difficult to find.
Or if you have a VHS player, you can find it on eBay for about £1.
Yes.
So that was KMS 4. Sorry if you heard some snuffling there. I seem to have a bit of runny nose today. But we'll just persevere as best we can. I hope that Andy's editing is particularly good.
Yeah.
Now, in my hand I hold the package.
Yeah. I should like to point out he is still wearing his clothes. It's fine. Mm. It's not that type of podcast.
So, yes, this is for me. And
yes. So, Phil, you're probably, when you listen to this, getting ready to piss yourself laughing about now. Now, remember the Turnbull model, because I'm probably going to have to watch this as well, so therefore I'm going to be inconvenienced as well.
Mm.
Now, the Turnbull model is, of course, never retaliate, always escalate.
No.
Just be aware.
I don't know. You're the fool, Turnbull! Are you not aware you're just stumbling into a massive trap? Oh, Andy looks upset, listeners. Let's explain what's going on. Now, are you aware that all through series 2 of Stardom, there's actually been a story arc? A story arc hidden to you. But you're not aware.
Doing something unpleasant to me.
Do you think it's just Phil? There's been a whole story arc. Now, the whole story arc began in episode 2.01. You may recall Mr. J.D. came on the podcast and he posed a question. The question was, how long is a piece of trollage? What's the maximum length of time? And he said it was 40 days, 48 I think it was, but he was wrong. The actual maximum length of trollage is approximately 9 months. That's right, Andy. 9 months. Now, are you aware that there's been a vast complex conspiracy against you on TVK forum, email, Twitter, Facebook, and in your life? Are you aware of this? This complex web of intrigue. Are you not aware that people have conspired to keep, I don't know, a certain piece of knowledge from me? This has been a program called OAMS. We'll explain what OAMS is in a moment. Many times OAMS has always been derailed, and we've actually had to take various measures to stop you from learning this piece of knowledge.
Operation something or other.
Possibly. Obviously the grounds have been laid. I mean, we've just been discussing KMS 4. Phil has been mentioned in the podcast quite a bit in recent terms. We've discussed a certain TV show at an earlier time, which will become obvious fairly soon.
Drawing a blank, going to have some soothing Jericho.
Have some soothing Jericho. And we've built up this whole idea of Phil as a fiendish thing, and that he wants to punish me as well. So, before we reveal what OMS is, there's a special message that Phil has given me, which I'll just get up on the screen here. So here we go. It's a statement to be produced in full. So you can't read it. I have to read it to you. And it says, "Dear Andu," because that's your real name.
Yep.
"Sometimes evil is instantaneous and prone to inspiration, and sometimes it takes months of careful planning. Recall, if you will, the prolonged campaign that Ralph and I conducted on Twitter and Facebook, claiming that Manimal would never be out on DVD, and how it culminated on this thread in the TMK forum, week commencing 24th February 2012. I'd like to point out
11.
That's a slight error there. But it was 2012. I'd like to point out that this is, what day is it today, Andy? Is it the 28th of August 2012?
Yes.
Now, when this happened in February, the planning had been in progress for a couple of weeks, a couple of months already. So it's about 9 months. Well, when someone found out that apparently Manimal was being released on DVD, well, we weren't able to obscure this knowledge from you. We wiped it from the internet. Be careful, stuff like that. So anyway, it appears I may have pushed things slightly too far, because 2 weeks later, via Rhubarb's DVD forum, I discovered a Manimal DVD release was in the works. Needless to say, this news did not go down well, and I rushed to the boards and text messaging to share my horror. Sadly, the text message, "You're shitting me," that I received from one of our brethren, dismayed in the news, has not been saved for posterity. That's because the campaign had been going for 7 months at this point. Sadly, let's hope this is now verifiable, because one member of our team, and I forget who, hatched a plan to keep this knowledge from you. It was felt to be in your best interest not to know, just in case your hopes were dashed. Upon reflection, this has proved to be a very wise choice. However, we can verify the date for these events, because I did make a couple of postings elsewhere in this matter that we were unable to remove. Now, this is a website called childofthe1980s.com, which makes references to it. And it goes back to October of last year, which is when the plan was hatched. Actually, October 2011. Amazing. There we go. Where this piece of information came to us, we decided we weren't going to let you know. Yeah, so now, seeing the release date for this title, which at that time was the 30th of April 2012, and not in the proximity to both your birthday and SwimCon, which was when we went to visit Phil.
Yep.
Again, you may recall the special episode where we went to Phil and talked about part of the story arc. It's all becoming clear now, isn't it? We elected to buy your copy as a present. We were therefore dismayed when the date slipped and kept slipping, thus vindicating our decision not to tell you. A grave moment occurred when someone slipped to your word that it would due out on DVD on June the 11th. So we'll just go to that thread there. And I suppose from you, on June the 11th, saying Manimal released on DVD today, in which Phil goes to great lengths to tell you that it's blatantly untrue. Fortunately, Amazon themselves came to our rescue with an email saying it had been delayed. Read this. So let's just go to the post here. There we go. Of June the 12th, where Phil reveals his email from saying, "Hello, we're getting to inform you the following items have been delayed as we are still awaiting stock from our suppliers. Manimal, complete DVD. One of Amazon's aims is to provide a convenient and efficient service. In this case, we've fallen short. Please accept our sincere apologies." Well, it's obviously a great disappointment. Did I say a word there that's untrue? No. Okay, yes. Because it was fabricated. Maybe I did fail to mention we had known for some while the release was on the cards. But as we say, there were certain websites were saying we'd been put back twice already, and we certainly did not want to cause you any distress if this might happen again. Which it did! Twice! Which prevented us from making an in-hand presentation at the annual TF Bun Fight in Birmingham. As this week dawned, and the release date had been put back, we felt it necessary to affect an additional cover story to protect the identity of the package you have just opened. Almost there. Knowing that my previous generous gift of Robocop DVDs had been spurned, and Avengers was being planned, we concocted the Getting My Retaliation In First story to make you aware a package was coming. Be assured, my work in the matter of sending you crap Poundland DVDs is now done. Unless I see something really good / piss poor.
So, it's not done.
We'd also like to mention as well that as part of this conspiracy and the story arc of the Stardog podcast is the time we went to the 2D festival.
That's right.
And I received a text message, and it almost gave away the game that Manimal was out. So then Phil had to send me an elaborate message, which was a complete lie, saying he'd put an order in for the Optimus Maximus Transformers figure, and that's what he meant by OMS. There we go. So here is the package. Now, obviously by this point, you have no idea what if we're talking bollocks or not. This could be the ultimate trolley. You've just seen the web that's been going on all this time. This might have a Manimal DVD in it, or it might not. I mean, I think you should just pause. Put your hand in. Put your hand in.
Give me it.
You should just pause. You should say, "I'm on the cusp of greatness or the cusp of terror. I just don't know."
There you go. My entire life is balanced on a knife edge.
That's true. He's opening the package, listeners. What's in the bag? What's in the bag? What's inside? What's he pulling out? It's obscured by paper. Is it the complete Manimal?
All April-length episodes, an interview with Glenn Larson, concept and production notes, a trailer for a band. But it contains mild threat, violence and sex references.
That's because it's Manimal. So, anyway, now you finally hold your beloved Manimal in your hands on DVD. We hope you enjoy it, and you're viewing this at flush your precious childhood memories of it down the chasm. But I suspect it might. After all, am I, and indeed Ralph, not a true friend? With thanks to those who have helpfully participated in Operation Manimal Silence these last 6 months, he's wrong, it's about nine. Carl, Nick, both Gavins, Martin, Ken, Ian, Nigel, Mark, Tony, and anyone else's name I have forgotten. Your discretion in bringing this matter to its planned conclusion has been much appreciated.
Thank you very much, Ashton Welcher.
Because there were so many times you got close to the truth. So close to the truth. The Manimal DVD, but we thought, no, this is vaporware, this will never come out.
Thing is,
have to hide the money from me.
If it had just been you saying no, I would have kept digging, but Phil has an air of, doesn't get as involved in the Japes as an air of...
That's why you were completely filled.
Yes.
So, what we'll do now is, we took a slight pause, A, because my nose is running continuously.
Oh,
he's just discovered the Dibba-Dibba clip. And secondly, so we can put an episode of Manimal on, and Andy can be shocked at the fact that it's not aged very well at all, is it? Shit!
I don't think there's anything that's going to make me say that shit.
We'll see you after this short musical break.
Manimal. Dr. Jonathan Chase. Wealthy, young, handsome. A man with the brightest of futures. A man with the darkest of pasts. From Africa's deepest recesses to the rarefied peaks of Tibet. Heir to his father's legacy and the world's darkest mysteries.
My son, you must have faith and learn. This is not the end. This is the beginning.
Jonathan Chase, master of the secrets that divide man from animal. Animal from man. Manimal.
Hello, we're back after the exciting musical interlude for the second half of episode 2.18, Operation Manimal Silence. Following that exciting, dare I say, nail-biting opening of an envelope and discussion of said envelope, we have reached within and we have called it Manimal of the Complete Series. The DVD set no one ever thought would be released because it would sell exactly one copy, and it sold one copy to Mr. Turnbull here.
Now, I'd like to, before we get into the, as you can tell from the tones of voice, the two diametrically opposed viewpoints about Manimal.
There's right, there's wrong.
There is my way. The intention for to buy this DVD for me, it was to have childhood illusions shattered, which has happened to members of this podcasting team on a number of occasions.
It's true, it's like I remember Time and Irani, Sylvester McCoy's first Doctor Who story. Loved it as a child, absolutely loved it. Saw it on DVD almost 25 years later, and
my soul died in torment.
It took a lot of vodka to get through that. Luckily, I had some on hand. Fortunately, I had no such embellishment of a liquid kind on hand today.
But
it's a school night.
You also have been quite vocal in your scorn about Manimal for as long as it's ever been discussed.
It's true.
I, however, loved it, and so the intention for this was to have my childhood dreams scattered. So
by Phil, who's not here.
So was it mission accomplished?
Let's find it. Give me that thing. Give it to me. There you go. So first of all, you can be forgiven for not knowing anything about Manimal, because Manimal, in addition to being gash, is justifiably obscure. Now, it was made in 1983. That's right. It took 29 years for this to have any kind of release. Wasn't on VHS, wasn't on a laser disc, Nothing. No one gives a shit. Anyway, made in 1993. So I'll just read to you the back of the DVD, which sort of explains the premise of it. So, you know, so first of all, you've got the kind of the voiceover bit, which is in my episode one, the featured episodes. I can do an accent if you like.
Don't feel you have to.
Dr. Jonathan Chase, wealthy, young and handsome, a man of the brightest of futures, a man of the darkest of pasts, from Africa's deepest recesses to the reified peaks of Tibet, heir to his father's legacy and the world's darkest mysteries, Jonathan Chase, master of the secrets to divide man from animal, animal from man, partnered with a young police detective and a former army corporal from the fields of Vietnam. A trio that stands against the crime that breeds in the concrete jungles and stretches its deadly tentacles to the fascinating but dangerous world beyond, the world of Manimal! So that's the sort of narration bit. The DVD just goes on to say, Jonathan Chase, Samuel McCorkindale, famed professor of criminology, with the inherited powers to transform himself into any animal he wishes, uses that power to assist the New York Police Department in solving major crimes. He is assisted by Book McKenzie, played by Melody Anderson, an intelligent and beautiful detective of the NYPD, and Tyrone T. Y. Earl, played by Michael D. Roberts, a former intelligence officer with whom he served in Vietnam. Now, after that, the DVD contains mild threat, violence, and sex references. Now, after hearing that, you might be forgiven for thinking, wow, that sounds kind of mental, that sounds kind of really off the wall and crazy. How did this only last 8 episodes? A pilot episode and 7. Well, the thing is, it was a mid-season replacement, if I'm right, like, for the time, and didn't do very well. and fortunately, did not even get a full season, or a full half season, which is usually around about 10 to 13 episodes, so it vanished without trace, basically, and I had only heard of it mainly because the old magazine TV Zone in the UK used to run various articles on cult television, and often the articles were about things like Manimal. Now, Manimal is what we call a true cult. Now, the word cult is often misused by the media quite a lot, and even by the likes of the BBC, when the BBC described their own television show, Doctor Who, which has between 8 and 10 million viewers across various media platforms. Per episode, they call that a cult. That is incorrect. A cult is not enough to form a minority, as we know. Manimal was one of those things. Now, I remember seeing an episode or two of this back in the day and thinking, wow, this is really quite rubbish. It's just dull. It's not actually crazy enough. That's my main complaint with Manimal, that it's just not mad enough. So, anyway, as I said, sometimes in addition to seeing things that you enjoy as a child and going, really, very good. Sometimes the opposite can happen, that you can watch something you saw before and you watch it again with different eyes and you go, it's actually not too bad, or it's got a bit of tap value, or it's so bad it's good, or it's not really good but it's kind of watchable. So we settled down for Manimal, episode 1, the pilot. Now, on region 2, which runs a bit faster than region 1 because PAL runs faster than NTSC, this episode is 1 hour, 11 minutes, and a few seconds long. By golly, it feels it. 10 minutes in, I gave up to make some sandwiches, but I had to come back because I had to see it through. Because it's a school night, I have no strong liquid refreshment of any kind, which was a cause of some difficulty for me. Now, the problem with Manimal for me is it's just not, as I said, it's just not mad enough. It's fairly pedestrian. Now, it does have the gimmick of your main character turns into an animal, or usually a panther, to solve the crimes. You know, technically it's quite well done for its time. Stan Winston does the effects, and a lot of the overdo it quite a lot with the bubbling hand effect when he changes. It's actually quite good for its time. And to be fair, it's a lot better than it would have looked like had it been done, say, 1993. It would have been done with very cheap, very bad CGI, and would be utterly horrendous to look at. So that's fine. Other aspects, the DVD surprised me, at least gone by the pilot, in that they've either remastered it or they've actually got very good master tapes to use for the DVD. I was expecting a typical slapped on DVD version where you get a washed out grainy print with scratches. no better than YouTube quality, which is what you usually get for sadly the vast majority of archive TV, particularly action adventure television of America of the 80s, is usually not looking too good. Or maybe it's because perhaps Manimal didn't play many often, so the master tapes in good condition. That could be a fairly legitimate reason. That's not a criticism, because the likes of the 80, their episodes look a lot worse because obviously they were played a lot. So, watched the pilot, and I just thought, there's no energy to this, there's no drive. It should be mental, but it's just dull. Despite the animal gimmick, there's nothing to really mark it out from your typical cop shows of the time, action adventure. It's very generic, very cookie cutter, and 10 minutes after watching the pilot, a lot of it's flooding out of my brain already. So, before I turn over to Andy for his slightly different opinion, which is wrong. A few things to point out of interest. Firstly, there was a scientist chap who appears who's been analysing some stuff who looks the spitting image of Scott Neiklich. Scott Neiklich is also known as Toy Guru, the current brand manager for Masters of the Universe.
And a bit of a pushback.
Well, I've never met the man. He doesn't come across too well in his
passive-aggressive YouTube videos.
Yes, but I do enjoy the toy range that they make. So, you know what? Swings and roundabouts. Anyway, he's got a double of almost 30 years ago who looks just like him and talks like him, even has similar glasses. The other thing is that this hails from the era of you've got your pilot episode, so not only do we want to encourage people to watch the pilot to do it, we also want to encourage the TV network to pick up the show, so we'll get like a what we used to call a special guest star. You don't really see the term special guest star used as much now, but generally in the 80s and certainly through the 90s is you'd get maybe some famous celebrity or famous film actor, bung them in your pilot, and that increases your odds of basically your show going further. So we've got Ursula Andress for this as a villain, and she basically does nothing. So it's kind of a waste of time having her, really. And the episode ended. No urge to ever watch it ever again. I've reappraised Manimal. I've watched the pilot. Just finished up with Manimal by saying this. There were only about 8 episodes, but then the character was revived for 2 episodes of Nightman, another Glenn E. Larson show, which was that early 90s?
97. Based on the former Malibu comic that then got bought by Marvel.
Yes. Nightman was a more successful show, and it actually got 2 full television seasons, so it got about 40 odd episodes. 2 of which an exciting 2-parter feature the Manimal. It's not, as far as I'm aware, available in Region 2. If you want to see that, you'll have to get the Region 1 American release, which I'm sure Andy will do within a week's time. So that's sort of the end of Operation Manimal Silence for me, and it's Mr. Turnbull.
Now, during the entire time Ralph's been on his diatribe, he can say with and confirmed that I sat with a stupid grin on my face pretty much the entire time.
You can verify this sad fact.
As I pretty much did during the entire running of the episode of Manimal. I absolutely still love this. Ralph's criticisms aren't necessarily without weight. It wasn't, as I say, anything groundbreaking. And he is right if you want to kind of examine it. They could have went balls to the wall crazy on this, and would it have made it last longer? Who knows? That's kind of a moot point. But I absolutely loved it. McCorkindale is wonderfully lecherous throughout it. And never anything less than splendidly dressed.
Now, there's 2 ways to look at the main character of Jonathan Chase, a.k.a. Man or Animal. You can look at it and you can see he's a bit suave, or you can look at the very clear subtext, which is that he's a Schedule 1 sex offender. He is clearly luring women to his house, drugging them in some way, and then undressing them and redressing them while they're out cold, then makes quips about it. This is in the episode. The main the female character, Melody Anderson, who you might be
Dale Arden from Flash Gordon even.
Yeah, so that's what you probably know her best from. And indeed it is what she's kind of most remembered for today, even though she had quite a long, reasonably successful acting career in television, as far as I'm aware. Which is mostly known for Flash Gordon. But anyway, she's the lead, and she kind of gets knocked unconscious at one point. She wakes up and...
No, she faints.
So she faints.
She thinks... The gimmick is, obviously, she...
Oh, that's right, yeah.
She encounters Manimal fairly early on and starts to think, did he turn into the animal or not? But nothing's ever clear-cut for her. There's a snake in a chap's bedroom, a proper snake, not euphemism for Willy or anything, and she breaks in because he's the guy that killed her partner, and she thinks it's Jonathan Chase. So she picks up and talks to it, and he just walks in the room, again, wearing a tuxedo, looking dapper, and she faints.
Yeah. So she wakes up in his bed.
A bed in his house,
and oh look, all her clothes are gone, and now she's dressed in
his monogram robe,
and then she tries to ask questions about, basically, wait a minute, how did I get into these clothes? And he basically ducks the issue, and sort of smiles a lot, and then tries to drug her. That's right, he's a Schedule 1 sex offender, that's why we can't believe in Manimal.
No.
Who knows what else he's doing? I think he's just using his guys as someone who can transform into animals to lure people to his abode, and he does the whole, oh, I'm Jonathan Chase, so I'm a criminologist lecturer, oh, look, I can turn into a snake, ooh, no euphemism intended, and off he goes.
Well,
anyway,
back to you. I think you'll find that's a rather skewed and very unfair reading of it, for one thing. He doesn't brag about turning down, he's desperate for her not to find out, and that's why he wants to slip her the Mickey Finn. Not so he can have his way with her.
I'm not so sure.
I think
a man as suave and sophisticated as Jonathan Chase secretly really wants everyone to know that he can turn into
Because I don't think he needs... You've seen him. He's a good-looking guy. Sharp dresser. And when you're introduced to him in his academic environments, because he does have his animal abilities, he does have super keen hearing. Mm-hmm. So there's a student up the back who's an attractive blonde for... and basically just similar looking for him to Nobber. So I don't think he's like Indiana Jones.
I was about to say, he's just like when Indiana Jones introduced, except that Indiana Jones is full of daring do adventure, and people love the character and his films all these years later, whereas Manimal does the same thing, and it took 29 years before anyone put any of his episodes out in the commercial release.
I think you'll find that this is now its time to be rediscovered as the absolute joy of TV.
At this point, I must reveal that Mr. Turnbull, my co-host, occasionally does drawings and cartoon strips and magazines and the like in his spare time. That is now on a mission to get the Manimal comic license.
Set.
Now, we've broken on a mission to... I've always wanted to acquire an IP for something. I don't know why. Ever since I knew what these things were, it's like, I quite like to own the rights to something. Something really cheap and obscure, just to get something that... Whereas I, of course, will one day acquire the IP rights for Ring Raiders. Ring Raiders, the exciting 80s toy line. Ring Raiders, of course, an exciting 1980s toy line comic.
The reason I'm laughing is not to blow Scott and Ralph's ambition for Ring Raiders. We've talked about this at length.
We talked about it just very briefly. Yeah.
It is just Ring Raiders was a gimmick where you had little jet planes and little rings.
And all from different time periods. So that
good guys and bad guys.
So we'd all fight with planes from like World War II. You could fight futuristic planes.
And we are actually wiggling our arms about as if we had.
Like,
but the whole point is, I cannot ever hear the word Ring Raiders said without thinking it sounds a bit rapey. And it does sound like, quite frankly. So
I'll own an IP to that one day, because I think there's actually, if you actually take away the guffaw inducing type name of if you actually look at the premise of, oh look, it's goodies and baddies in aerial warfare fighting through the ages. Now, I was vindicated by this when, I think it was one of the big plane companies, B something, I wanted to say BT, but it's not the
plane
company. Boeing, the one that Mr. Wallace works for.
British Airways,
right. There was an advert earlier this year, it was showing British Airways pilots throughout the history of the company getting in their planes and flying away. So it started off with, like, you know, 1930s and then 40s and then Concorde and then the jets they've got today. And then the very last shot of the trailer was all the planes from different ages flying towards the camera. And the first time I saw it in the cinema, I punched my knee and I went, that's bloody Ring Raiders. That could happen. So there's potential there.
What I will say is, before we go to that,
we'll discuss that in full, because in the next episode, because I found my Ring Raiders annual and issued one of the comics, so we'll come back to that. But anyway, talking about obscure IP rights, no one really remembers Ring Raiders, but I know there's greatness in it. Manimal, Turnbull thinks there's greatness in it. Now, I would say, if you were to take the Manimal comics right, then I would say do something probably mental with it and actually explore it a bit further. But the episode, the pilot itself, is just dreadful.
As I said, I sat... Now, there have been... I've had three massive grinning experiences this year in terms of visual stimulus. Mm-hmm. First was The Muppets, which I sat with a shit-eating grin on from start to finish.
Which was dreadful.
Most recently, before Manimal, was Expendables 2.
Which was great.
Which was an absolute... It was an affirmation of life. It's true. By the amassing of high body counts and ludicrous set pieces.
Yeah, and very slight spoiler, because by the time this goes out, it'd probably all be gone from the cinemas, but Jean-Claude Van Damme kickboxes someone to death.
Yes. And that's also, Dolph Lundgren is a legend.
It's true.
But, Manol, I sat without a word of a lie, I grinned and I did enjoy it.
It's true.
And Ralph at this point was not happy that I was enjoying it.
No, this was not the outcome of Operation Manimal Silence.
So
the outcome was supposed to be that your dreams were supposed to be shattered. You're supposed to be crying, holding Steve Dean in your hand, saying, why, this should have stayed a memory. That's what was supposed to happen.
Yet again, victory for Turnbull. I'm sorry, but I did enjoy it. Again, yes, there are flaws in it, but as we've kind of talked about at length on these podcasts, there's a lot of material that we can sit through and we'll watch.
Yes.
Flaws kind of forgiven.
Yeah, but I just draw the line. A guy can turn from man into animal. It's just utter nonsense. You know, it never really works. It's like the other television thing where you had someone turn into an animal was the second series of Space 1999. Where you had that chick. What was she called?
Maya,
that's right, Maya. Space 1999, first season, brilliant, great, fantastic show. Second season, pish. And it's not even a second season because it's been retold to such an extent it's an entirely different show. It just happens to have the same name and some of the same actors. In fact, bugger that we do the first series at all. Anyway, that had a character called Maya, and she would go woo, usually, and she would turn into like a space creature or animal type thing. And you know what? It was never any good. Because it doesn't work, it's a gimmick, it's just crap, it's just rubbish, and I just can't believe in it.
Okay, so you're all over the idea of fighter pilots from different time zones.
But that makes sense. You can see a sort of science to that. You know, all you have to do is just accept the conceit of time travel. Like
okay,
this. And then you can have planes going.
But you go
to an air show. I've been to an air show. My first air show this year, and you had a World War II era biplane, and it was flying in formation along with a current big red rescue helicopter.
Okay, I'm not saying that this the time travel conceit. We watched Doctor Who. I'm not about to say time travel.
I was about to say.
But what I'm about to say is that the conceit of getting things together from different time zones. Okay, but here's what happens. World War II biplane, jet plane. World War II biplane, boom, dead.
You forget something, which is the baddies who have the power to go through time with their evil plane stuff. I've got lasers and shit. They arm their planes up. They go pew pew pew.
But then when they go back to their own time, they go.
Yeah, and then sometimes they can be more manoeuvrable, and they can whoosh about.
Okay,
stuff.
Here's the thing. Lasers, manoeuvrability, plus biplane,
yes.
Still equals fiery coffin of death against a jet engine.
No, we will see. There will be, as I said, in a future episode, there will be a full in-depth commentary on Ring Raiders and Phil with regards to the printed media and the cartoon. And I'll prove to you that can actually make sense. But back to Manimal, right? One of the main reasons why Manimal doesn't work, right? Very impressive Stan Winston creature effects. Stan Winston was one of the most talented people to ever work in film and television. Full stop. Yeah. Great work. Nothing wrong with his work at all. So I'm not criticising the work. But what I'm criticising is the transformation process in terms of how long it takes. Now, in this episode, he does the whole blah, 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 transformation thing. And it takes quite some considerable time. At one point, he's all these tigers and lions. And he's standing there going, blah, 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 blah. And he's taking ages to transform. Now, if they'd been particularly hungry, they would get him. Another reason why it doesn't work is, let's say, you've got to get out of a scenario really quickly. You think, I'm in a cave, for instance, because and all the rocks are coming down. I need to get up and fly away. But it takes you 5 bloody minutes to transform into an eagle wing. Blah, 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 blah. Then you're dead. It doesn't work. It needs to be, and I know it's probably a limitation on the technology of the time and also showing off the effects, but it's actually one of those rare times where actually a modern CG would be better, because you could do it quickly like that and you would just go zoom, transform.
We shall find out when we continue Operation Manimal Endurance.
I think I'll find out
that Ralph is going to watch the other 7 episodes. I may allow some potato juice to fortify you, but we'll be going through the rest of them over assorted podcasts in the future. The pilot is that's where they showed it off far too many times. I will agree that they did take so, but that was to kind of show here's how it works.
To be fair, that is what you do in the pilot. You do tend to over the egg things, and you've got a longer episode, so your pacing is not quite what it should be, and all this kind of business. And there are very few television pilots that are actually flawless, but few bore me as much as the pilot for Manimal.
I'm sorry, but it was great.
So,
as you can tell, a resounding victory for
there's no victory for you, because we Operation Manimal Silence succeeded. If you listen to the name of it, it's called Manimal Silence. We bleaked out all mentions on the internet. Any way you could find out that Manimal was coming in DVD was hidden to you for months on end. Months, I say.
But remember, that was the goal, but the ultimate end goal was obviously to shatter my childhood, as I know from the text messages that were exchanged by you to certain members of Operation Manimal Silence, who the good captain was quite gracious in defeat. But I understand that that little Philip Ayres is not as happy.
Talking of happiness, I feel now is the time to go outside and get some fresh air. So we will bring this exciting, scintillating episode of the podcast to a close. As before, you can find me on Twitter at StarDubbing, all one word.
I'm at Andrew D. Turnbull. You can also hit us up on the website at www.star-dub.com.
Where I believe you now have cartoony strips.
Yes, my Weird Without End strips will be there as well, so there'll be stuff, there's stuff for me, and eventually we'll coach Ralph into posting stuff on there as well from time to time.
But Andy, what is Weird Without End? I, the listener, don't know.
Oh, it's my pop culture parody strips. Sometimes Transformers, sometimes other things, just little three-panel style gag newspaper strips. So you can find them up there, basically, as and when I do them.
Well,
and if so, you have...
I thought you'd completed your sales pitch.
I had completed my sales pitch, but I was about to segue nicely into pointing out that if you do want to suggest things, because we do take on board listener suggestions, you can hit us up, again, as we said, either Twitter or the website, or we do have threads over at the TMUK forum, at tmukhub.proboards.com. Over at Full Metal Hero at fullmetalhero.com, and at the Nerdsphere Network forum at nerdspherenetwork.madmouth.com.
So anyway, so I'm going to say goodbye to you via the medium of very slowly transforming into a panther. Here we go.
You sound like a fucking Dalek mutant. It's not a panther. You meant to go bow at the end, as it always happened.
Bow!
Jesus Christ, about to manage your Irish accent. with that, gentle listener, we will take our leave of you after this revelatory episode of Stardub. So, what next? Where do the team go from here? You'll have to wait 2 weeks to find out. Farewell.